So we normally do a series here at Metro. We like to spend a few weeks going through a different topic, really digging into it. But we also occasionally like to do special one-offs, where just for one evening, we take a swing at a big topic and discuss it for the night. And that's what we're doing tonight. And you can see behind me that the title for this evening's talk is, here it comes, Stuck in Midian. As it comes, oh, there's my name, and then Stuck in Midian. And that might not make any sense at the moment. It will in about 10 minutes or so time, so hang on tight. But first of all, I want to go back to talk about Love Running, because we are 1 week out, 7 days away. For some of you, 7 days, it can't come soon enough. You feel you're ready, you've done all your training, you're raring to go, you wish it was tomorrow. I'm guessing for more of us, 7 days doesn't feel like very long at all, right? Maybe you're the type of person who you just, the training's not really gone to plan. There was a lot of mornings when you said you'd get up and run, and then you looked outside and there was just a slight drizzle in the air, just like a tiny mist, and it was like, no, the Lord's saying I shouldn't run today. And so you're 7 days out and you're thinking, right, got to buy some running shoes, 10K in a few weeks. I remember this time 2 years ago, last time we did Love Running. By the way, we've kind of explained Love Running. Hundreds of people across Bristol running to raise money for Azra Refugee Camp and also causes here in Bristol. It's going to be awesome. 2 years ago, I'm preparing to do Love Running myself, the 10K, and I am feeling, I'll be honest with you, super confident. Too confident, cocky, arrogant. I've gone into it thinking, I play football every week, I've run a marathon in the past, I'll be fine, it's all good, no problem. And I remember thinking, all I need to do is just stick next to two guys that I play football with, because they're great runners, and I know that if I just hang on to them, I'll get a great time, then it'll be easy, no problem at all. So I went into it feeling pretty confident. And I remember lining up on the day next to these two guys, and as we started, I just realized I may have miscalculated a little bit, because I was looking at them, and you know those people that are just runners, the skinny type, the ones that when they run, they kind of glide across the tarmac. They look like a gazelle in the savannah as they run down the harbourside. And I was looking at these two guys. These are people that, you know, we say we love running, and a lot of us, we don't love running. These guys actually love running. They're like a 10K in the morning before work, and then get back, 5K before bed, a little cheeky one if they got time. And as soon as we started running, I suddenly looked at myself. I looked at them gliding across the pavement. I looked at myself and I realized I do not look like that at all. If they're gliding on the pavement, I'm treating the pavement as if it's wronged me in some way. And I'm just like stomping along, running, and my heels are striking the pavement. And, you know, I'm practicing in St. Paul's, and people in Clifton are like, oh no, Sam's running again. We can feel a tremble. I just realize I look so ungraceful. It's really hard work. I'm like a kilometer in, and they're just chatting to each other, talking about life, talking about their dogs, their cats, all that sort of stuff. And they would occasionally turn to me and be like, Sam, how you doing? And I'd just be there like, yeah, I'm fine. I'm fine. Just keep on running. Just gonna keep on going. And then I got to 5K, I thought it was 5K, looked up at the sign, it was 3 kilometres. This is going to be a lot harder than I thought. Got to 7 kilometres in, and honestly, that was the moment when you went past the 7 kilometre mark that I realised I'd made a terrible mistake. I had been running way faster than I could. I had set myself this big challenge. I had really good intentions that I was going to smash a really quick time, that I was going to, you know, it was going to breeze for me, and then I suddenly realised this challenge is huge. I am not prepared for this. And those last 3K, they could have been like 300 meters. It wouldn't have mattered. I was crawling them, whatever happened. It felt so huge. Maybe for you, that's how you're feeling a week out. This challenge seems enormous. 10K seems like a big challenge, one that you can't possibly take on. Or maybe for you, it's the fundraising bit. It's this whole thing of actually the reason we're doing Love Running, because we want to make a difference, because we want to see change in our world. And maybe for you, you think about, you see the video of the Azra refugee camp, you think, yeah, I want to make a difference. I want to change things, but actually the challenge seems too big. It seems inscalable. It seems like such a huge crisis that what can I do? What difference can I actually make? Or maybe you're someone who you really care about the people that are sleeping rough on our streets in Bristol. You want to do something about it. You walk past someone, you buy them a coffee, you sit down and have a chat. and you feel like, yeah, okay, I'm making a difference. Then you keep on walking and you see another homeless person, another guy that's sleeping on the streets, another person, and you just start to realize this problem is huge. What can I actually do to change this? How can I make a difference? When the challenges are so big, what we feel like we can offer is so small. And so the question that I want to look at tonight, I want to answer together is this. What do we do when good intentions aren't enough? What do we do when our good intentions to try and tackle a problem, to try and make something happen, to try and be a force for good in the world, just doesn't quite cut it? What do we do when the challenges are so big and what we offer feels so small? What do we do when good intentions aren't enough? Because actually, the people, you look at people that have transformed the world, people that have done amazing things, and it's very easy to think that they never worried about this stuff. They never doubted themselves. They always just knew that they were bound to make a change. But I promise you that anybody that's contributed something significant, that's seen real change, that's seen inequality beaten in various ways, would have asked themselves, is this more than just good intentions? Am I actually making a difference here? Am I actually changing anything? And we see that as well in the Bible. So you see a ton of characters in the Bible who, if you just look at it at a glance, you see them doing amazing things and it looks spectacular. They're making a huge difference. They're fighting God's cause. But actually, when you take a closer look, you see people that are asking the same question. How can I make a difference? Is what I've got enough? Am I just, is this just good intentions? Is this just me running around trying to be a nice person but not actually changing anything? There's a guy in particular who, I think we see this with really clearly, a guy called Moses. So Kate spoke on Moses a few weeks ago, an amazing talk in our series, The Ancients. So if you want to hear more about Moses, go and watch the Moses Refused talk from that series. So good. And he was a guy who was born in Egypt as an Israelite, born a slave. The Israelites were enslaved by Egypt, the superpower of the day, the economic powerhouse, the military power who could conquer all, the great power at the time. The Pharaoh, the guy running the empire, was the most powerful man, a demigod in the eyes of the Egyptians. And so Moses is born into a family of slaves. And they try and help him escape this. They send him down the river in a wick basket, and he's picked out by Pharaoh's daughter, of all people. And they choose to raise him as a son of the family. They raise him as a prince of Egypt, hence where the movie name comes from. He gets all the best teaching. He gets told how to be a ruler, how he's in line to rule this kingdom of Egypt. He is the prince of Egypt. And then we pick up his story as he's going, he's this kind of powerful guy in Egypt, and he thinks, I'll go out and have a look at how the Hebrews are doing, how the Hebrews or Israelites, kind of same name for two different groups, for the same group of people. How are they doing? How are they getting on? And so we pick up the story in Exodus, and it says this. One day, after Moses had grown up, he went out to where his own people were and watched them at their hard labor. He saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his own people. Looking this way and that and seeing no one, he killed the Egyptian and hid him in the sand. The next day, he went out and saw two Hebrews fighting. He asked the one in the wrong, "Why are you hitting your fellow Hebrew?" The man said, "Who made you ruler and judge over us? Are you thinking of killing me as you killed the Egyptian?" Then Moses was afraid and thought, "What I did must have become known." When Pharaoh heard of this, he tried to kill Moses, but Moses fled from Pharaoh and went to live in Midian, where he sat down by a well. So, we have Moses, we have this ruler of Egypt, and he sees a problem. He sees an Israelite being beaten by the Egyptian slave driver, and he thinks, I'm going to do something about this. He's full of good intentions. He wants to make a change, and safe to say it didn't end up too well. The strategy that I would advise is not going around killing people. That's what he does. He kills the Egyptian, buries him in the sand, and suddenly Moses is in trouble. He's a wanted man for murder. He tried to make a difference. Now he's fleeing for his life. And eventually, he ends up 285 miles away in this place called Midian. He sat down by a well. apparently. If you've seen The Prince of Egypt, this is a bit where a camel comes and picks Moses up by the hair. Love that bit. Great movie. I'm going to reference it a fair few times, so hold on to your seats. And so I just want to imagine what is going through Moses' head at this point. Here's a guy who's tried to make a difference, who's tried to do the right thing, who's tried to solve a problem, and yet here he is sat by a well. Is he thinking, oh, what was I thinking? Who was I to think that I could actually do something? Who was I to think that I could actually make a change? Maybe he's kind of trying to convince himself, he's saying, well, I did something right. You know, at least I did something. I killed a guy, but hey, none of these guys here, I hope, have killed anyone. But hey, I'm doing something. At least I'm getting off my bum and I'm trying to fix a problem. I think in Moses, actually, what we see is like your classic burnt-out liberal. A guy that's like, I wanted to do something. I wanted to try and make a difference. And it's just life's worn him down. He tried to do the right thing. He tried to make a change. And yet here he is, sat by a well in Midian. He is like the guy that says, I'm going to go vegan because I believe it's the right thing to do for the planet. And then within 2 weeks realizes, man, I love eggs for breakfast. I love eggs for breakfast. Or the person who's like, I'm going to walk to work instead of driving because that's good for the planet. And then December comes and it gets well cold. And you're like, get me back in my car. And you get to lie in. I know, it's difficult. And this is the picture that we have of Moses, a guy that tried to do the right thing, that had good intentions, and yet here he is, sat by a well. And in fact, he sat by that well for the next 40 years, or at least he stayed in Midian for the next 40 years. And for us, Midian's a pretty good metaphor of where quite a few of us may be at. It's probably a pretty good metaphor and accurately describes how a lot of us feel in day-to-day life. Because Midian, by all accounts, is a pretty comfortable place. It is, again, if Prince of Egypt is going anything by, there's a lot of dancing around bonfires. There's beautiful women. Moses finds a woman and makes her his wife. And they have children together, two kids. I imagine that, you know, he gets this flock to look after from his father-in-law. He's probably like a 7 out of 10 shepherd, just clocking into work every day, just doing his job, getting that 9 to 5, getting that bread. He was like, he was just living your comfortable life. He probably saved up a bit and got a really nice camel, top of the range, like faster than everyone else in town. It's not a bad life. It's a pretty decent life. It's a comfortable life. It's one that for many of us, we're like, yeah, I could do Midian. It seems all right. It seems fine. But the trouble with Midian is that no one made a difference from Midian. That Moses was never going to change the world from his place of comfort, from this place where he's hiding from the problems, from where he's in the middle of nowhere. And actually, for many of us, that's where we find ourselves, that life is kind of comfortable. We want to make a difference, but actually Midian also seems kind of nice. Maybe you wanted to change the world when you were 18 and now you're 30 and you realize that the world has changed you and you're kind of just in this place of, I used to care. I had good intentions. What went wrong? And actually, what's mad is that, fast forward a bit, and Moses is freeing hundreds of thousands of slaves. This is a spoiler, by the way, if you didn't know the story. He frees a whole nation of Israel, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of slaves. He leads them. He establishes a nation. He kind of plants and helps establish the Jewish faith. This extraordinary man who did extraordinary things. And so we have to ask the question, how did he go from Midian mediocrity, from a guy that's just doing the normal comfortable life, he's not really doing anything outstanding, to someone who actually changed the entire world, who freed a whole nation of people? How do we go from someone who's just doing the 9 to 5 and really not changing much at all to someone who's literally transformed his people? I think the answer we find in the Bible is that he had an encounter with God. That he met God face to face. That's what changed it for Moses. And we read that in Exodus in the next chapter. So we read on, it says, now Moses was tending the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian. And he led the flock to the far side of the wilderness and came to Horeb on the mountain of God. Then the angel of the Lord appeared to him in flames of fire from within the bush. Moses saw that though the bush was on fire, it did not burn up. So Moses thought, I will go over and see this strange sight, why the bush does not burn up. When the Lord saw that he had gone over to look, God called to him from within the bush, "Moses, Moses." Moses said, "Here I am." "Do not come any closer," God said. "Take off your sandals, for the place where you are standing is holy ground." Now, I don't know if you're new to church, if this is something that you normally do. Maybe just someone told you that there was a DJ later, by the way, there's a DJ later, and ice cream, and you were like, okay, I can come along to that, I can get involved. And you've never even heard this story of Moses. Even if that's the situation you're in, I'm sure you can appreciate that when a burning bush starts talking to you and it's like, "Do not come any closer, take off your sandals," you know that something real is about to happen. You know that something important is about to be said. Whenever someone says, "Take off your shoes," it's like, okay, we're getting real here. And so this is like the context, this is what Moses thinks. What is this thing that God's going to say that's so important? We read on to the next slide and it says, "Then he said, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob." So God's like, he's laying it out. He's like, by the way, I'm a big deal. When I talk to you from inside a burning bush, when I tell you to take your shoes off, it's not just anyone. I'm your descendant's God. I am the God. I am the big dog. I am talking to you. And so what I'm going to say right now is going to be really important. It says that this Moses hid his face because he's afraid to look at God. And so the question is, what is it that God says to Moses that transforms Moses, that takes him from this guy living a mediocre Midian life to someone that's genuinely making a difference in the world? Is it he lays out a strategy? Did he say to Moses, here's where you went wrong? Because actually running around killing people, not really a strategy to bring about change. So what you need to do is you need to set out some goals. Then you need to establish a timeline for how you're going to do that. Maybe some fundraising targets, a few events to get some money in, set up a volunteer base. You got a strategy. Then you can start to make a difference. Or does he say, you know, Moses, this guy that eventually is given the Ten Commandments, who establishes the Jewish faith, who kind of brings in the Ark of the Tabernacle where God lives. Is God going to give him a little trailer of that, something to get him excited, something to get him worked up, raring to go? What is it that's so important that changes Moses' life? The Lord said, "I have indeed seen the misery of my people in Egypt. I've heard them crying out because of their slave drivers. I am concerned about their suffering." This is it. This is the thing that changes Moses' life. This is the thing that takes him from a guy who's just got good intentions to someone who is transforming his world. He sees that God has heard them crying out. The thing that Moses realizes is he encounters God's heart. He encounters God's heart, and it changes everything. And God's heart is with the oppressed. It's with the people in Israel who have the boots of the Egyptian Empire on their neck. It's with the people in Israel who brick by brick by brick have to toil away over the hands of their slave drivers. Moses encounters God's heart and he realizes that at God's heart are the oppressed, are the poor, are those that don't have a voice for themselves, are those that are marginalized, are those that the rest of the world looks down on as less than human. That is God's heart. And Moses comes face to face and encounters God here. And this is the thing that takes Moses from being someone who gave it a go to someone who can sustain it over the long haul. I know I've experienced this myself where I've got passionate about things and then over time it's just sort of like dripped away. I remember I was really fortunate when I was about 19, 20 to go and spend some time with the persecuted church in Central Asia. These are guys that are persecuted by Islamic extremism, by a dictatorship that's sectarian. There's kind of a lot going on here. And I would sit with them, eat meals, and they would tell me about how, you know, if they were caught, they're in big trouble, that their colleagues, their pastors, were in prison or worse, that their families were threatened. And I remember listening to these stories and spending time with these people thinking, I never want to forget this. I never want to go back to life as it was. I'm committed from this day on to make a difference, to stand up for this sort of thing. But sure enough, as I came back to England, I kind of slowly filtered back to being like Moses sat at a well at Midian, where I used to care about something, where I used to be burning with passion for something, where I used to want to make a difference, and then it just sort of faded. I remember a few weeks ago, we have a guy that's come to live with us who is a persecuted Christian himself. In fact, he had to leave his country because of the persecution. And I was having a conversation with him, hearing his story about how his family received threats at nighttime because of their faith, but how he can't go home to be with his family to protect them because it's not safe for him because he believes in God. And when I was listening to this story, all I heard over and over again was God saying, this is my heart. This is where I am. This is what I care about. You want to be close to me? This is it. You want to transform the world? This is it. Because the truth is, I thought I cared about this stuff before. I thought that this mattered to me. But when you encounter God's heart, you realize he cares so much more. The pain that we think we feel, the difference we want to make, is nothing compared to when we encounter God's heart and realize that he hears the cry of his people. You know, Moses, he saw a problem. He saw an Egypt slave driver beating a Hebrew. God doesn't just see a problem. He hears every cry. He hears the cry of the entire nation. If we want to make change that lasts, if we want to go beyond just good intentions, we have to encounter God's heart. And that word that we keep going back to of cry, you know, if we go back to the passage, I have seen, indeed seen the misery of my people in Egypt. I have heard them crying out. This word crying out, this phrase, is actually a really, really powerful one. It's an important phrase in the Bible. In the Hebrew, as it flicks around, we can see it, sark. Like, this sarks. Can you say sark? Thank you at the back. Thank you guys on the front. Very keen. Middle, fairly average. Can we go again? Middle, please. Sark. There we go. Lovely. This word sark, really, really powerful word. On one level, it just means when you're wounded, when you're hit, it's the sound that you make. It's the cry of pain. But on a deeper level, for the Hebrew language, it actually is a question. This crying out is a question of, where is my justice? Does anybody see me? Can anybody feel my pain? Does anybody care that I'm hurting? This word sark, this cry out, is a question of, where is my justice? And it's used throughout the Bible. The time before this instance we see it is when a guy called Cain kills his brother Abel. And the Bible describes Abel's blood as pouring onto the ground. And as it did, it cries out, crying, where is my justice? And time again throughout the Bible, we see sark popping up. And every time, it's not just humans that respond. It's not just kind of people with good intentions trying to make a difference. When we see people crying out, the response is that God says, I am with you. You are so close to my heart. I see you. I hear your pain. And throughout the Bible, we see this over and over again. And we see it today. It's as true today as it was then, that it might not look like slaves being whipped to make bricks, but it might look like Syrian refugees asking, where is my justice when I was forced to leave my home? It might look like people trapped in the sex trade here in Bristol, crying out, where is my justice as we walk past the massage parlor? Over and over again, we see in the Bible and we see all around our city today, people crying out. And we need to realize, if we want to make a difference, we need to encounter God's heart that hears that cry and act. And so you say, well, I get it. I've heard the cry. I feel like I know that stuff. I feel like I've encountered God before, but what do I do with it? Or maybe you're someone who church isn't really something that you do. And actually, for you, you're off the hook. And actually, let's extend it. If you're someone who has been a Christian for a while, but you don't think you've ever encountered God on that place where, like, yeah, I get, I want to feel, I want my heart to break for what your heart breaks for. I want to be close to your heart. I want to encounter you in that way. If you haven't had that, then you're also sort of off the hook as well. We can come back to that later. But for those of us that feel like we've encountered God, for those of us that have heard the cry in the way that God hears the cry, the next step is really, really clear. It says in the next passage, "And now the cry of the Israelites has reached me. I have seen the way the Egyptians are oppressing them. So now go. I'm sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. So now go." If you've heard the cry, if you've encountered God, if you want to be close to him, the instruction is clear. So now you've heard the cry, go. If you love the things that I love, go. We can't stay in Midian. We can't stay in the place where it's comfortable, where it's easy. God says, if you've heard the cry of the people, then you have to go. Because the reality is that he could have solved all of this by himself. He's God. He could have freed hundreds of Israelites himself. He did most of the hard work anyway. He sent the plagues. He split the Red Sea in half. That's the big stuff. He could have done it all himself. But actually, God chooses to use Moses. Because he says to him, I want you to go. If you've heard the cry, if you've encountered me and seen how my heart breaks for the Israelites, then I need you to leave Midian. And actually for us, if we say that we want to follow Jesus, then that's the natural response. That we sign up to love the things that God loves. We say if we're going to actually be serious about doing this thing of trying to follow Jesus, then we sign up to love the people that society considers unlovable. To stand up for the people that don't have a voice. To go. And so the second thing that we need to learn if we really want to make a difference that goes beyond good intentions is first we encounter God and his heart. And then we obey the call. So now go. Obey the call to go. If you're someone who you've heard the cry, and for you maybe that's something like poverty, that you see injustice, you see the fact that some people are mega rich and some people have next to nothing, and that's the cry that you've heard. That's the thing that breaks your heart, that you know God cares about that and you care about it too. If you know that a woman born in South Mead is likely to live 17 years fewer than a woman born living here in the Harbourside. If you've heard the cry of people in our city, the message is clear. Go. And that's a big challenge. I don't want to say that lightly. I don't want to say that that's an easy thing to do. Because actually, we'll all have reasons why we don't want to. We'll have reasons why that sounds kind of tough. Because actually, it can be tough. For Moses, he had a bunch of them. One of them was that he didn't feel like he was qualified. He didn't feel like he was the right man for the job. He gave God a list of reasons why he just wasn't the person to do it. But before God even got to the job description, before God even got to what qualifications you need to do this, he told him, go. If you love the things that I love, go sit with the widow. Go give a home to the orphan. Go free the slaves. And we can see a few more of these excuses. You know, basically, God and Moses have this little kind of, it's not, I guess it is an argument. It's more just like a little bicker where Moses is like, no, I don't want to go. And God's like, you must go. And he's like, no, I don't want to go. No, you must go. And eventually, of course, God wins. He gets angry and angry. And he's like, seriously, you have to go. And then Moses said to the servant, pardon your servant, Lord. I've never been eloquent, neither in the past nor since you have spoken to your servant. I am slow of speech and tongue. Pardon your servant, Lord. Please send someone else. I think one of the reasons that Moses, and understandably, is saying, no, send someone else, is because he knows how much it's going to cost him. Because he knows that it's not going to be easy. He's going to have to go to Jethro, his father-in-law, and be like, you know, all these sheep I've been looking after, here's my notice. I'm afraid I've got a mission to go. And he's going to have to get his family, his two kids, his wife on a donkey. He's going to have to take them from a comfortable life. You know, we talked about their really lovely camel and the nice house I'm sure they've got. And he's going to put them on a donkey and they're going to head back to the place where he's wanted for murder. Of course, it's going to cost Moses a lot. Of course, he's looking for a reason not to go. He's going to go and face down a superpower with a staff, telling the great power of the world, you should listen to me because I have a staff, but also because I have a God. Of course, he knew how much it was going to cost him because He's going back to a place where he used to have reputation. He used to be the prince of Egypt. And here he is, he's going to side with the lowly slaves, the Israelites. And so the lesson, the final lesson that we can learn from Moses about how he went from a guy that was just good intentions to actually changing the world is Moses counted the cost. He knew that it was going to cost him a lot. And he still went. And for us, maybe that is what love running is for you. That you haven't run more than 500 meters before. And you're going to run 10K on Sunday. And actually, you're counting the cost, saying, I know this is going to hurt, but I've listened. I feel like God's saying, go. And so I will. Or maybe a bunch of people for us who we can't actually do love running for various reasons. And you might think, how can I get involved? How can I help? Can we have a hand up if you are doing love running again? Oh, lovely. A lot of hands. If you see it, keep them up. Keep them up in the air. Keep them up. I would give a round of applause, but your hands are already in the air. Look at these people. And if you say, how can I actually help out? Go to one of these people and say, I want to give you some money. I want to give you loads of money. In fact, I want to give you so much money that it's really going to hurt. Because I believe that's what God's called me to live in a way that's sacrificial and to count the cost. Or if you got too many friends here, you don't want to pick between them, you can go to loverunning.info/donate. Give until it hurts. Give until it's sacrificial. Count the cost of what it means to really make a difference. Because actually, this is really important to who we are as a church. When we started, we said that we wanted to be a church that helped people find Jesus and then love one another, follow Jesus, and serve our city. Actually, those first three things, find, love, follow, they're kind of, we can do them sometimes without there being much of a cost. We can help people find Jesus. If you're here and you're just exploring things, trust me, it's one of our favorite things to introduce people to Jesus. That's not a big sacrifice for us. It's a load of fun. Of course, it's easy, or not easy, but of course it's great to be part of a community where you love one another, where you're going through life together. Actually, for those of us that are Christians, yeah, we want to follow Jesus. Yeah, we want life to the full that he promised us. And so we can sort of do these first three without there being that much of a cost. But then it comes to serve, and that's when it starts to get, okay, this is actually going to be a little bit tricky. This is actually where I might have to start making some decisions. Decisions as small as, I'm going to miss Champions League football tonight to go serve at the Wild Goose. Or decisions as big as, actually, I need to drastically think the priorities in my life. I need to think about where I'm spending my money, about what I'm spending my time. Maybe your career needs to rethink, because actually you've heard God saying, do you hear the cry of my people? And you want to follow him and go. Because the challenge for us is actually, if we want to make a difference, if we want to be more than good intentions, it is going to cost us. We don't want to be a church of people that are just good intentions. We don't want to be known as a group of people that are just those nice Christians that do a nice church service and it's nice, just because we don't want to count the cost. I don't want to be a group of people that are here for good intentions. I want to be a community that is changing our city, that is transforming Bristol. And that might cost us a lot. In fact, it definitely will. But Jesus said, but God says, if you want to make a difference, it might cost you everything. And so maybe for you, it could be that you're a student and you're thinking, I feel like God's called me to Bristol. I've met God and I've seen his heart for this city. And I want to follow him. I want to go and I want to commit myself here. But the cost is high, because actually living here is really expensive and you get a load more money if you work in London. Or I could move in with my parents where it's a load cheaper and save money that way. You might have to count the cost. If you've heard God's heart for Bristol and you say, I want to commit to being here. Or maybe you're a couple and you're looking to buy a house and it's very tempting to go somewhere else where, you know, your money gets you a lot more. Actually, you've heard the call to Bristol. You've heard God say, go. This city needs you. And so maybe it means you get a two-bed rather than a four-bed. Maybe it means that you're in not such a nice area with not such nice schools, a lovely church. But maybe that is the sacrifice And Moses saying, I don't know if I can do this. I don't know if I've got enough. I don't know if I can bear the cost. And God says to him, it's a little bit late because I've already sent your brother Aaron and he's on his way and you're going to go together. And maybe you've got a brother Aaron sat next to you. Maybe there's someone to your left and to your right who actually you can do this together, that we can do this together, that this isn't something that we try and change the world on our own, just running around. Actually, we are a community where we come together to make a difference. What would it look like if hundreds of us said we are committed to experiencing God and knowing his heart and loving the things that he loves and going and obeying the call when he says, now go, knowing that might cost us everything. The extraordinary thing is that all of this takes place on what God called, the Bible calls, sacred ground. Moses, again, says to Moses, take your shoes off, you're on sacred ground. And it's true for us today that we have the opportunity. This is sacred ground. If you want to meet God today, if you want to experience his heart, this is sacred ground. When we go to the wild goose and you listen to someone's story and how they ended up where they ended up, and you hear God's voice saying, this is where my heart is. This is the people that I long to be with. That is sacred ground. We make the wild goose into sacred ground where God's heart is known, where there is real transformation. When we run Love Running, all of us in red Love Running t-shirts, along that 10K track, we're making that sacred ground, saying this is a place where God's heart is known. This is the place where people can experience the fact that God hears their cry. We can be a church that is more than just good intentions. We long to be a church that transforms our city. And so this is the big idea. If we want to go beyond good intentions and make a real difference with our lives, we have to encounter God's heart for the oppressed, obey his call to go, and count the cost. And so I'm going to invite the band up. We're going to go back into worship. But first, I just want to pray for us as they head up. Unclear instructions there, you know. Because it all comes down to, do you encounter God's heart? Do you meet him face to face? Have you? Have you had an experience where God shows you, this is what I care about, this is what I love? Have you had that in a while? Are you feeling closer and closer to Midian, where you become more and more indifferent? It all changes when we see God face to face. So why don't we stand together if you're able? I'm gonna pray for us as we go back into worship. And like I said, we believe that this is holy ground because God is here. And if you're new to church, what we're going to do is we're just going to invite God in his Holy Spirit to come and be with us. We believe that he already is, but we're going to ask him to come in and show himself to us. So Holy Spirit, would you come? Holy Spirit, would you come and show us your love? We're just going to spend a moment waiting for him. I just had a picture, slightly strange picture of, sometimes God speaks to us in images in our head, and I had a picture of someone who starts off as a really tiny little doll and just gets inflated and inflated and inflated. That's a weird image, but I think God's saying that there's some people here who feel tiny, who feel like they could be blown around and that they can't make a difference because they feel so small. And just a sense of God's spirit just inflating you, just growing you bigger and bigger and bigger. And that's him saying, I'm equipping you. And it all starts when you meet me. Maybe for some of you, there's just a little like heartbeat, a little quicker than normal. And if that's you, I think God's just saying, come, see my heart. Come, love the things that I love. Let your heart break for the things that break mine. If those things, either of those things are true for you, then while we worship, then we've got guys over there at the prayer sofa to your right who would love to pray for you. We'd love to pray that you experience God tonight. In the meantime, let's worship.